It's time. Southwest has not been the cheapest. We have a companion pass that's expiring at the end of the year. We have flown other airlines because I can get it cheaper. I can get three seats cheaper than paying for two. And so the fact that there's so many people that just go right to Southwest, I mean, that's got to be the most ingenious marketing of anything. But eventually people are going to wake up. You know, they still call.
I think it's the two free check bags. I really do. I think it's the two free check bags.
And that's a fair point. We never check. We seldom check. So that's not something that's going to move it for my family. But I mean, I just feel like people are eventually going to wake up on that. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we welcome Ryan Smith, a prolific blogger, or I'll say writer for blogs. We've seen you, I'm trying to think, in writing for Award Wallet. You're also TPG alumni, and now you're at Upgraded Points. Welcome.
I've also written a handful of articles at basically everywhere, including all the sites that are about to shut down. That's another topic. But yeah, I've been around the space for a little bit, I guess.
Okay. Sites that are going to shut down?
Oh, have you not been following all the drama with like Forbes Advisor, USA Today Blueprint, CNN underscored money? They all got an absolute hammer from Google for reputation abuse. They've all been de-indexed from Google. So if you try to even search like Forbes Advisor best credit cards, like it won't even show up. They've been de-indexed as just a punishment for kind of the gamification that they were doing for search rankings. And if you get de-indexed from Google and none of your content's going to show up to anyone anymore, you're going to lose all of your traffic, all of your marketing dollars. Your like affiliates are basically gone. USA Today Blueprint has already announced that it's going to shut down that project. I always forget the name of the project, but Red Ventures was essentially running the credit cards team at Wall Street Journal. That project is going to shut down. Forbes Advisor hasn't officially said anything yet, but I mean, and the writing's on the wall. I think that website's done.
Wow. I mean, I knew the de-indexing happened. I just didn't realize, you know, things had escalated so quickly.
Yeah. I've seen some screenshots of some internal text messages and emails from the Red Ventures and Wall Street Journal people saying that basically like those people are going to keep their jobs. They're going to be shuffled around to other Red Ventures companies, which is a positive. It's good that those people are not losing their jobs. The Forbes Advisor people who were running these sort of white label projects at CNN, at USA Today, and then, you know, Forbes Advisor people, who knows what's going to happen to them? I know people at all of those sites who are all very worried about their jobs. They've all done layoffs. Again, recently, the work at those websites has completely dried up ever since Google originally started punishing them, which is probably what led to some of these previous layoffs. I haven't gotten assignments from any of those websites in months now and probably never will again. The USA Today Blueprint has already even said that they're going to just shut down that project at the end of November. So it's going to be really interesting to see, but not only see what happens to those people and what happens when that content disappears, but you know, in some ways it will have kind of spillover effects to other websites that write about credit cards and points and miles. Will they all move up in the rankings? Like if you take out three competitors and you were ranking for number five on best credit cards for lounge access or something, well, does that mean you might move up in the rankings? Like what are going to be the other carry-on effects of these, especially when you think about how a lot of these websites pay their bills, which is, you know, affiliate marketing. So what happens to point.me now that they're getting into, now that they've started doing editorial content? Will all of their articles, you know, start moving up in the rankings? What happens to some of these like medium and smaller websites that just couldn't compete with Forbes Advisor, CNN, these, you know, heavy hitters because of brand legacy? What happens to sites like One Mile at a Time, Award Wallet, you know, other frequent miler? What happens to their content that was ranking behind all of these websites? probably it moves up in the search rankings, but does that turn into actual more clicks and more traffic and more, you know, affiliate revenue? That will be interesting to see. But it's some very insider baseball for people who write at these websites.
But that's the interesting thing. I mean, if there's one thing that we've heard from our listeners, it's they enjoy some of that insider baseball. I mean, we've tried to have pilots on. We've had other folks in industry. I mean, we just recorded with JT Ginter last month, I think. I don't know. They blur together this time of year. So we really appreciate that.
We like to peek behind the curtain, right? We like a little bit of a view into the industry. It's kind of fun.
So in the industry is going to be really interesting because, you know, think about for anyone who, you know, has freelanced in the space, writing about credit cards, points and miles, travel, that kind of stuff. A lot of those people kind of dabble here and there. Okay, so if you take those places away that you used to get work from, and now you take all of the employees who actually used to work like full time at those places and throw them into the job market as well, it's going to be really interesting, I guess, because I don't want to say it's good and I don't want to say it's bad. Like, these are people's jobs who, you know, themselves didn't really do anything wrong. They were just, you know, producing content. It's the people behind Marketplace Inc., which ran Forbes Advisor and these others, who were doing all of this stuff knowing that they were playing with fire. So you're going to throw all of those people into the job market who normally would have probably tried to pick up work at these sites that are shutting down, whether that's full-time, part-time, freelancing, while you find something more long-term. And now all of those are going to be kind of dead. I don't see like US News and World Report and CNBC and blah, 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 opening enough positions to suck all of those people up. Like, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens to people who work in this industry, whether that they're freelancers, whether they're part-time, whether it's a side gig, or whether it was full-time and they've now lost a job and the places that you would normally think of to try to apply for are also shutting down. It's going to shuffle a lot of people.
That's truly unfortunate. But it is interesting. We had Richard Kerr of Built-On probably 2-3 months ago. He specifically mentioned how there was such a shortage of people that can actually write. And I'll say write, you know, probably more in the long form than like the TikTok or Instagram. Hearing of this development, I'm almost hopeful that that kind of marries a demand with an increase in supply. We don't have any insight into that. Just, you know, that basic comment. But hopefully that's just another angle for these people that are, you know, being displaced.
Yeah, it might become much more selective. But yeah, anyway.
So we dove right into the industry talk, and we didn't really give you the chance to introduce yourself beyond my, sure, my quick couple of words.
Yeah, my name is Ryan Smith. I've never had to spell my name for anyone, which is pretty nice. I currently live in California, but I've lived in a lot of places in the US. I've lived in a couple different countries. I've also been to every country in the world, which is pretty cool. Yeah, one of those guys. I first heard about points and miles actually in like 2016, just at kind of like a random encounter at a hostel in China. And this other person at the hostel said, "Oh, I flew to China for free using points." And I really kind of jumped in with both feet. And I think I remember at the time, like pretty shortly after that, I then started writing for Miles to Memories. And that was the first website that I ever wrote for. And I think at the time, I even remember someone saying, like, this guy just kind of came out of nowhere. Like, all of a sudden, I was like earning and burning and writing flight reviews and writing for this website. And then I started writing for this other website. And a lot of that was because like my wife was in school at the time, and I had very irregular work available to me while I was still kind of getting all of my work situation resolved, because we were living in Brazil and my wife was going to school. So if I could save money on travel, like, I needed to go hardcore on this, because like we didn't have the income to be able to pay for travel at the time. And I just like jumped into the deep end. And then, you know, like here we are 8 years later, I've been working full time in this industry since like 2020.
So I have to ask, being based in Brazil, we've talked about it on the pod And I've leveraged it crazily, just the lack of YQ out of Brazil for many, many years in the teens. Were you aware of that, I guess, first? And how did you maximize?
By the way, fuel surcharges for the lay people.
YQ and YR. Yeah, fuel surcharges, carrier imposed surcharges. So to make that simple, like if you ever look at a flight out of the US on United Airlines going to England or American Airlines going to England, you'll notice that after you use your miles, the amount of cash you have to pay is significantly different because United doesn't add those surcharges, American does. So in Brazil, there's actually a law that limits the amount of surcharges that can be added, you know, and it's kind of scaled. If you're flying in economy, it can't be higher than X. If you're flying in, you know, first class, it can be higher, but it's not going to be the crazy $1,000 that you pay when using your miles for an Emirates first class flight departing from the US versus departing from Brazil. And so that was really nice. I got kind of spoiled by that. And then now when we're looking for flights out of the US and I see some of these surcharges, like it gives me sticker shock still. And I still kind of avoid those because I think I just got so used to like, this is egregious. Like if I'm using my miles, why do I want to pay $800 and 100,000 miles on some of these flights? So I think it was actually, I don't know if it was like good or bad for me because I got so used to it and enjoyed it so much during the like 5.5 years that we lived in Brazil. I got very used to redeeming business class flights out of Brazil to kind of anywhere I wanted to go. And it was going to be, you know, $100, $83, whatever, no matter how far I was flying or kind of what airline I was flying on. So it was pretty nice. And now I have a hard time trying to click on a button. If there's going to be like 300 is like kind of my limit, which I know sounds like not very much for what a lot of people will pay on premium.
It makes you think twice, right? You think twice about your redemptions. You know, I think most of us are going to look at a multi-$100 surcharge or fee on top of the miles and take a little pause, right? And say, all right, did I really check all the options? Is this really the best one? You know, and in some cases it might be because, you know, I know for the case for me, like sometimes if it's back in the day, you know, when it was like Virgin or something where, yeah, it was only like 10,000 miles and yeah, it was a couple $100, but I mean, it's only 10,000 miles or something for like a coach ticket or something. And I'm like, that's hardly anything. So it's like I'm just buying like a discount ticket, getting a coupon for a discount ticket or something. But yeah, for some of these business class redemptions where you're doing 100,000 miles or something, and then, as you said, paying $800 on top of it, that's extortionate. So,
and I guess it comes down to like everyone's going to approach those flights in a different way. Are you looking at it like, well, 800, maybe that's what I would pay for like a economy ticket to wherever I'm going. And then, okay, so I'm going to pay 800 for the economy ticket. And then I'm using the miles kind of as like an upgrade. And if you think about it in that way, maybe you're okay with that. But if you come from like, hey, I use points and miles because I want to like travel, you know, for free. And I hate when people say it that way. But like, if I'm traveling for free, like $800 is nowhere close to free. Then I think those people, it's going to be a much harder button to click on to confirm that flight.
I'm not in the boat of free. I'm in the boat of if I'm paying $70,000 and you still want me to pay $700 or $800, that feels like it's 140,000 points, in which case that's a little bit excessive. Every time there is an appropriate award, and you know, sometimes those awards that have the high fuel surcharges might be the award that's available when you need it. I know a lot of people that fly a lot of British Airways and I don't understand it, but I totally respect it.
Maybe they're doing revenue fares. They're not doing a redemptions.
You're not seeing the difference.
You know, they're doing tier point runs.
Yeah.
And stuff. You started us on kind of the, you know, the talk of Brazil and some of its regional advantages. Should we kind of stay in South America? It seems like, Ryan, you do quite a bit of traveling down south.
Yeah, I love South America. I will visit South America and Latin America at any opportunity that I get. I really believe that like everyone should be going to South America, especially people who have points and miles. We lived in Brazil for over 5 years. I just got back from another visit to see some relatives. And like, there's so much that South America offers, and the dollar is really strong in all of like South America and Latin America. So if you can get there with points and miles, there are some decent airlines. Delta's sweet spots into and around Latin America don't really exist that much anymore for business class. But it's still possible to find decent redemptions, like to fly on LATAM with Alaska miles. And as long as you don't wind up on their old 222 business class, which is still on some of their older 787s and 767s. But if you can wind up on their new business class, like, it is a legitimately good product. It's not like good for South America. It's a legitimately good business class product. I was really excited when they rolled that out kind of just before we left Brazil. United, you can still sometimes find decent awards in business class down to South America. Avianca, if whenever they finish getting their real business class back, has a decent product. Going down to South America, we booked, I don't know if it was a mistake fare or what was going on, but we paid $397 per person from Cancun through Bogota to South America in business class. And when we booked it, it was on like true Avianca business class with 1-2-1 lie flat. Avianca has leased some old Norwegian planes, and we got swapped onto one of those and wound up in 232 recliner business class. And it was a pretty rough overnight flight, but it was $397. So I didn't change it or cancel. But there are some actual like decent flight products. And then once you're there, there's some really great hotels that you can find for like very inexpensive redemption rates. So I think South America is like, I don't get why more people aren't going there. Like, if you just love Paris and you want to go to Paris every year, more power to you. But like, I don't get why there's such an over concentration on people going to like, got to go to Europe or the Maldives. Like, those are the only two destinations you're allowed to go to. Like, go to South America. At least several people that I know who went to some of the Taylor Swift concerts in South America, like, really fell in love with their time there and now want to go back and see more, because there's just so much to offer.
I've been to probably Brazil, I don't know, half a dozen times, maybe even more. I even dragged this guy to Brazil.
My first time in Brazil with this man over here. And I have to agree. I think the value for money, hotels, you know, when you're there, there's a lot of good things about it and a lot of good bargains and a lot of great accommodations, a lot of interesting cultural things. And a lot, just you're absolutely right. I think Latin America, South America probably doesn't get enough, I guess, exposure in the miles and points world. I must admit, you know, of course, you know, we flew one of those. I was snickering earlier because, you know, of course, we flew one of those old LATAM 222 business class recently. I guess one of the things is, like you said, like for us here on the East Coast, you know, our options, at least from kind of the DC area, are kind of limited. You know, we get some occasional United planes and stuff, but, you know, the Avianca flavor that they fly from here is kind of a little uninspiring. It's not the true business class product for, you know, a 5-6 hour flight down to the Colombia. I guess maybe that's one of the reasons why at least some people on the East Coast, maybe they don't fall in love with at least the plane options, I guess.
And it's even worse because, you know, it used to be that you could get pretty decent flights if you just connected in Dallas or in Miami. And I don't even see a lot of availability there. I've been looking for Buenos Aires, otherwise known as EZE. If you go to the international, there's, I suppose, a closer in airport code or airport as well. But I've been looking for Buenos Aires for quite some time, even looking at Montevideo to see if I could just get there and then we could just, you know, hop over the river. And I have not found seats. We were looking for the two of us, so just two seats, and I've been looking for three seats, and I just don't see anything that is anywhere comfortable. You see Copa, and I'd love to, you know, pivot to that in a moment or two, but you see Copa or you see Avianca, neither of those products out of the DC area are comfortable. And in fact, the funny part is, I think your comment on Twitter was what stemmed this conversation because you were saying how uncomfortable what looked like their nice new lay flat product is. There's just not a lot of comfort to get to South America is, I think, the problem.
Yeah. On like kind of legacy carriers, like they have good products, but yeah, finding some of the award space without just ridiculous effects of dynamic pricing can be pretty tough. You know, like sure you could fly there comfortably in like Delta One suites, if you're willing to pay 290,000 sky miles, which I'm not. So it can be tough. And I think it used to be very kind of easy to find like 65,000 United. You know, this was like back when I was living in Brazil. it was pretty easy to find $65,000 per person to fly United Business Class from Brazil up to Houston or Chicago or DC or something. Now that's really tough. And the price continues to increase all the time. The Copa, it becomes available, but it was just very average. If you go into so Copa has a new business class product that they call Dreams. And I've flown Copa's old business class as well, which was like a 2-2 recliner. That was actually the first time I ever redeemed miles for a flight in business class. And my wife and I wound up on that and we were like, what's the hype about? Like, I don't get it. This is business class. Like, why is everyone so excited about this? And we didn't realize that there's a difference, that there's like seats that kind of like lay flat and that's like what you want. So I've flown Copa's old product, and this is a significant improvement over that. It's a significant improvement in that context. But if you compare it to other airlines, like the footwell was very cramped. I'm 5'10". I found that the seat was like uncomfortable in the laying down position because I felt kind of too tall for the seat. And I know a lot of people who are taller than me. At 5'10", if I'm thinking that it's uncomfortable, like good luck if you're taller than that. It was interesting because it's lie flat on a Boeing 737 with a single aisle. It's a 2-2 business class layout. On the first flight, I was on the aisle. And while I was sleeping, the woman next to me had to like kind of climb over me to go to the bathroom. And that woke me up. So that aspect wasn't that great. Meal service was decent. Like we had meals on both of my flights. They gave us an amenity kit with, you know, like kind of everything you would expect. Private bathroom for the business class passengers. So in that regard, like it's okay, but it's not something that I would go out of my way. I would not avoid it, but I wouldn't go out of my way to try to fly the Copa Dreams product.
I think I saw some of your photos and they look kind of like the seats that are on the American Airlines, like 321T in the business cabin, not the first cabin, but you know, the one with the 2-2 on the narrow body. But, you know, of course an Airbus is a lot wider than a 737. So that kind of makes sense, right? That they had to probably squeeze some inches from somewhere.
Yeah. And where they cut them out was in the footwell.
Yeah, I guess so.
Did you still get a feeling of superiority watching all the folks go back to economy because you had a lay flat? A lay flat on a narrow body. There's something, you know, something.
Yeah, so I think it was kind of novel. Like, I thought it was kind of funny. Like, dude, I'm about to get on a Boeing 737 with a lie flat seat. And what's really funny is that Copa actually has two models of those plane. And so some of them have four rows of business class and some have three rows of business class. And I flew both of them. So I flew from Panama to Los Angeles was with more seats in business class than my flight from Sao Paulo to
Panama. Probably makes sense. I would probably think the demand.
They probably can sell more of the premium product on that route, I guess.
Trying to think of which other airlines do 737 lie flat. That's not a common thing.
I thought United was going to do that. I don't know whether it was the MAX 9, but I know that there was some talk about United putting in like a Polaris light product.
That would be really interesting because the box of a Polaris seat takes up a lot of space. Like I would struggle to see how they could get more than just like a 1-1 layout on that.
Well, I mean, that's what's going on a 321 XLR, right? Like the new Iberia birds are 1-1 in business class.
With like an angle to try to, you know, it's kind of like angled parking. It doesn't seem rational, but you can fit more cars in with angled parking than you can if everyone parks straight. I don't know why.
I don't know, Trevor, if they ever fly one of those 737s from the DC area, we might have to check it out though. I mean, just for the novelty, although I think I have a little benefit of being a little shorter than you. So maybe it won't be such a big problem for me, but you might be squished in a bit if you're going to lie down.
If it means we get to Argentina, I'm all in.
Okay. And
the fares on these are actually not bad. Like I booked that flight for, it was like $1,085 and I booked it in the Amex portal with the business platinum and got 35% of my points back. So there's also that, like if you drying up on award space, like paying and then getting 35% of your points back, is it setting the world on fire with Amex points value? Like, no, but it's easy
to
find. But
it's an overlooked thing that people, you know, don't realize, you know, cheap, you know, finding a really good revenue fare sometimes is just as good as finding a good award redemption. I know we've probably talked about it at least a couple of times. And we kind of talk a little bit about a couple of our examples of when we've been able to find some inexpensive business class fares. But, you know, I don't think people talk about it enough because, you know, not only that, you can potentially earn miles, you know, depending on the programs. And you know, sometimes that can be a reasonable amount.
And, you know, sometimes even, you know, it's cheaper, depending upon what you value the points at. I did a little producing, and it looks like there was speculation that the 737 MAX 10 might have it, but who knows whether the 737 MAX 10 will actually be built, number one.
It's not even FAA, was certified yet, right?
Well, I mean, yes. Let alone the other issues that Boeing's facing. The one that looks like it might actually happen, though, I think was the Airbus A321 they were looking at doing a lay flat. So I don't know if they'll actually
United was.
Yeah, there's like a A321 LR, I think. I saw a post from a year ago on View from the Wing. And so it looked like it was so early, it was sketches. I just remember thinking United narrow body. You know, what is this? The next 757?
Well, I mean, like United is also so addicted to Boeing that is like all of this just sounds wild to me that they're making plans that involve Airbus aircraft and all of this.
Well, didn't they buy a bunch of A319s and A320s like 5-7 years ago? I felt like they went really deep into Airbus on the narrow bodies.
I felt like Scott Kirby, you know, recently, you know, kind of, you know, was so fed up with Boeing. Like that, I felt like he said, "Hey, we want to make a deal, right?"
And maybe that's it. Maybe you got to show Boeing that we're not a captive audience. But I can't remember. Like I struggle to remember a United flight where I was on an Airbus aircraft.
Oh, I feel like I've been on so many of them on narrow bodies.
Narrow bodies.
So it's interesting. Yeah. Let's pull that thread a little bit more. Airlines kind of, you know, diversifying their aircraft makers or aircraft makes. It's interesting that this period of time, and I know Southwest had a lot of other confounding problems, you know, before Elliott even came in, they had that first quarter of a loss, I think, in the history of the company in sometime in the last year. Here they are, they're flying 737, 800s and 900s, in some cases on routes that, you know, would only be viable on a 700 or a MAX 7. And, you know, what's the future of the MAX 7 at this point? They are bound to Boeing and they are hurting for it, it would seem.
Everywhere you look on their websites, it's like, we are proud to be an all Boeing 737 airline. Like, we exclusively fly 737s. Yada. It's like kind of part of their marketing. You know, now that they're considering kind of changing who their brand is, this might be the time to, you know, hey, if we're changing one thing, let's reevaluate everything. This might be the time for them.
Yeah.
Well, they're reevaluating almost everything else, right? I mean,
yeah.
Seat assignments on Southwest. I mean, who would have thought?
If you're reevaluating 90%, why not just reevaluate 100%? Maybe they changed the logo.
Wasn't that the case with WestJet? Like, they had been, I thought, an all single aircraft type airline, and now they've got wide bodies. They go long hauls. I mean, although maybe that's a better example. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Maybe that's a better example for Alaska, which was proudly all Boeing, then bought Virgin, then got rid of them, and then was proudly all Boeing. Now is buying Hawaiian, getting more Airbuses. I mean, it's kind of a funny story. I haven't seen this one before, but I mean, I think with a Hawaiian procurement, I don't think Alaska gets rid of their wide bodies this time.
I don't think
why they bought them.
I think that's one of their concessions as well. I think they're legally bound to keep the aircraft and keep some of those routes.
I knew the routes and I knew the devaluation. I didn't realize that they were stuck keeping those aircraft.
I don't know if the aircraft necessarily, like, I don't know if they're required to specifically keep the aircraft, but I think it's kind of a package deal. Like,
Buying. Like, by buying Hawaiian, it's the know-how and the wide body, you know, planes themselves. And
are they going to try to run like a 319 from Honolulu to Tokyo? Like, probably. I don't know if it has the capacity, but also as well, like, you can just fit so many more people on that route if you're flying a wide body aircraft.
I agree with you. I do think that was one of the appetizing pieces of buying Hawaiian was the aircraft, including the wide bodies. I was just merely trying to be a little bit funny on how Alaska had kind of bought the, you know, because they got those A321s, which had more capacity from Virgin, and then they eventually got rid of those. I just think it's interesting to watch the industry, you know, as it ebbs and flows with the mergers and the bankruptcies and the hostile takeovers.
Speaking of which, I mean, that was in the news, right? The Spirit going bankrupt. I mean, talk about reshuffling the deck. I mean, I think we've reshuffled the deck with low-cost carriers.
You know, Spirit is going to kind of do, I think, what some of what Southwest is doing. It's like, let's try to emulate some of the legacy carrier stuff. Offer seats that have more legroom, and then we could sell those at a premium and reevaluate our package of benefits for elite members. Because I think what really, where they were thriving, Spirit, Frontier, Allegiant, all of these other carriers, was they could offer prices that were just so much cheaper than everyone else. And then, like, kind of one day, the legacy carriers were like, what if we just sold basic economy? And like, boom, it just, basic economy took over. And now you get a seat and nothing else. Well, that's what Spirit offers. That's what Frontier offers. So now their kind of competitive edge on those things has kind of gone away. And it's interesting to see how these kind of low-cost model airlines are all responding to this in very different ways. Like Southwest is kind of throwing everything open and they're going to change their entire business model. And they're going to have to revamp their credit cards as well, because their credit cards are very built around the current model. Like if you get this credit card, you get four, you know, like upgraded boardings per year. Well, the upgraded boarding is going away. So now you got to change that credit card. So I think Southwest is kind of going in this direction. Then Spirit wants to do kind of some of the same. They're going to offer, you know, extra legroom and think about elite benefits and blah, blah, blah. And then Frontier is going kind of the opposite direction, where they're adding perks. Like for their basic fares, it now includes a carry-on. But that's something that all of these other ones are charging you for. So, you know, they're all kind of, I think, trying to respond to like, what can we do that makes us unique? How do we rival some of these other carriers in the space? And I think like Avelo, Breeze, you know, Allegiant just announced a ton of new routes. So they're all, I think, trying to, like, they're going forward, and Spirit is just like limping along.
Wasn't that Allegiant with those routes, was that Apple Tours or Apple Vacations or some sort of vacation company that sort of had helped enable that, if I recall? Maybe I'm thinking of something different.
Talking about a particular route.
Well, it was a collection of routes. It was like one from like St. Louis, or it was one from like someplace in what I'll call flyover country that just everybody was really confused about, and then finally made that connection that there's some, you know, a vacation consolidator that, you know, that had done something where, you know, if you fly from, I guess, St. Louis or Kansas City or something down to Orlando, that was, you know, one of those new Allegiant routes. But now I'm going to go back to the producer mode and validate whether or not that's actually right. That's the fun of having a natural conversation, right? You know, sometimes, you know, a comment sparks a memory and you can kind of dive into it, but then you don't have the full memory. And if others aren't singing the same tune, you feel a little awkward. You know, while we're sort of talking the industry side, I'd love to get your feeling on, you know, some of the developments this year relative to the miles and points side, right? We've talked a lot of industry. Let's talk miles and points and kind of developments that you think were impactful this year. And maybe any, pull out your Nostradamus hat and, you know, anything that you think, just, you know, read the tea leaves for us.
Sure. So I actually wrote down three things that I think were really big this year from points and miles. The Turkish devaluation at the beginning of the year, that upset a lot of people. Number two that I wrote down was legacy carriers in the US continually moving the goalposts. And then number three was Hyatt's introduction of dynamic pricing on Mr. and Mrs. Smith awards. So I think all of those were like kind of big and also like negative and also caught a lot of people off guard. The Turkish devaluation, like, I felt like it was only kind of a matter of time. Like, it had gotten so much press and it was just such a good deal to fly like from Newark to Honolulu nonstop for 7,500 miles. Like, it just felt too good. And when they made the announcement, like, I just kind of wasn't that surprised. And I don't think that they slashed and destroyed. It went up. It's like 10,000 now. That's still not that bad, especially if you're flying from the East Coast. From the West Coast, it's maybe not that great of a deal anymore. It's like comparable to other programs. But if you're flying from the East Coast to the West Coast or from the East Coast to Hawaii, I still think that it's a good deal. The part that sucked was what they did to the rest of the program. Like, I don't think that long haul booked with Turkish miles is much of a deal anymore.
They get a little bit more space, though, I think is the only thing that you get, right?
Yeah. And I think the availability of finding the awards through Miles and Smiles rather than trying to book with like United Miles or Aeroplan. Yeah, you're going to find a lot more availability. But the like per segment pricing, I think, has killed a lot of it, unless you're flying nonstop. So if you're going to Istanbul, there are still some like 65,000 from, you know, the East Coast to Istanbul is not that. I was going to say it's not bad, but it's good. That is like a good price for business class. It's the per segment pricing that really zaps things, especially because a lot of times people used to connect, like, let's say, you know, Washington, D.C. or like New York to Istanbul up to, I don't know, England or Poland or wherever you were going. Now that you're backtracking, you're adding all that extra distance, and that extra segment is adding, I don't know, 20,000 miles plus extra time and everything. So I think that that sucked a lot of value when they changed the model to this per segment pricing rather than just like a flat.
That's why you position using Amtrak like we did back in the springtime, right?
Yeah. And if you can position somewhere with a train, bus, you know, Frontier flight for like $19 or whatever, then, you know, you can get around a lot of that. It's the other side of the ocean where if you're connecting through Istanbul back over to Europe, like you're backtracking and every mile that you're backtracking is costing you extra. Like that kind of hurts.
So, you know, you mentioned about, you know, the elite programs kind of moving the goalposts. I mean, they do that. They have to do that from time to time. I mean, they got to, I guess, prune the elite ranks, but you know, I was reading some of the news this week and they were talking about how Delta essentially said in one of their investor day, right? They basically said, we really don't want to upgrade any more people. You know, we want to sell all of these first class seats and premium seats. And that really kind of, you know, it's kind of interesting that they're actually saying it like explicitly now, you know, that these elite programs are not about upgrades anymore. It's not about nice perks. It's, I don't know what it's about. And quite honestly, I'm surprised that there isn't more revolting going on where, you know, people who've been elite members for decades or years or whatever aren't just like, why do I bother with loyalty? You know,
it's interesting because that stuff kind of started to get said out loud just before Christmas last year. I was actually on a podcast from, what podcast was this on? Was it RM World Travel? I was on a podcast and the other person on the podcast was actually Brett, the vice president of Alaska Mileage Plan Loyalty. And he was talking about like, you know, their program and blah, blah, blah. And I was invited to be on the podcast because I had written a post saying that basically like the best status to have is free agency. And he had started saying some of this of like, they're trying to coach their members to understand that like, you need to really understand that these benefits are like as available. There's only so many seats on a plane in first class. If there's, you know, if we have 10 seats in first class and we sell five of them, we only have five to upgrade. And if there's 10 people with elite status, then we can't upgrade all of them. But what we can do is that you can get, you know, you earn your bonus miles and you get, you know, priority boarding and blah, blah, blah. And my point was, I can get a credit card and do that and I don't have to do anything. And now I can have a free check bag, earlier boarding group, whatever. So why should I chase status if you're telling me that all of those things that you're dangling in front of me, chase elite status because you maybe might get upgrades. Well, now you're telling me that maybe the likelihood probably isn't and that I need to learn to accept that. Well, then why should I care? And I think now we're seeing more of that in these programs saying you need to learn that those things are not going to probably happen. And it's like, well, if they're probably not going to happen, then why am I chasing this elite status? Like, am I chasing the elite status because I'm going to get like group one boarding? Am I chasing the elite status because I'm going to get, you know, 20% bonus miles on paid flights? Like, what's in this for me? And I think a lot of people have like kind of stayed in this hamster wheel so long that they like grin and bear it. They complain, but then they keep chasing the same elite status for next year.
I'm probably one of those hamsters, by the way.
I was one, and then they pulled me back in. Like, they gave me this, here's your status, you get this. Americans, like, if you get X number of loyalty points in, like, 3 months, then you get to keep it, then you do it again, then you do it again. And then here I am, I'm like, I made that, and then I'm only, like, 20,000 points away. But, like, loyalty points, you just put credit card spending, so it's a little bit easier. I don't really go into it thinking that I'm going to get upgrades. I've gotten probably more upgrades than I ever expected to. And when I say that, I probably only got 4 upgrades on like maybe, you know, 6 or 8 flights. But I still go back to the idea nowadays is book the seat you want or prepare to be in the seat you booked.
Exactly. And for me, that has kind of always been my response when people say, you know, about elite status, because then I might get upgraded and blah, blah, blah. And my response is, if I want to fly in business class, I'll just use the points and fly in business class. That way I know that I'm going to be flying in business class. If I'm like crossing my fingers and hoping for an upgrade on an overnight flight from Chicago to Frankfurt, where I really want to sleep on that flight, I'll just use the points to book in business class. Now, I understand that that's not always a reality for everyone. However, here's why I say that. I have multiple friends who, you know, do points and miles, and they have 3 kids, 4 kids. So for them, the idea of like, well, I'll just pay the extra miles and move my entire family of 5 people into business class. 1, those seats are hard to find. 2, that's going to be a lot of miles. But from the flip side, you're also not going to get 5 people upgraded into business class. So that becomes kind of a moot point.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the people who realistically could wind up on the upgrade list, because usually it's like you and 1 companion, right? Depending on the status and the program. So if we're talking like you're hoping that you and your spouse or you and your friend might get upgraded, you're crossing your fingers and that's not going to always happen. And the airlines are telling you that the chances of that happening are going down and down. So if you can, just book yourself into the seat that you want.
And they're moving the goalposts even further away.
Yeah. So, and then next year, status is going to be harder to earn than it was this year, which was harder than the year before it. Just book the seat that you want.
And even with that, I don't think it's going to increase the probability, because in most cases, you're literally only seeing those, just as you said earlier, you're seeing only like 1 or 2 seats available for upgrade by the time you get to it. I mean, Delta point blank, I think they had their earnings call, yesterday or a couple of days ago, and they're selling something like 90.
I think it was like 88% or something.
Yeah, 88%. If you're a Delta elite, you're not there because you're getting your upgrades.
No. And I mean, like a friend of mine who's United Premier 1K sent me a picture, I don't know, probably like 2 months ago. He was flying out of DC back to San Francisco and he was number 61 on the upgrade list. As a 1K.
Let me tell you how to say you're just another number without saying you're just another
number. You
have
the top status in that airline and you're number 61 on the upgrade list. There's not even 61 seats. If the plane was empty, you're still not getting upgraded into, you know, whatever he was flying that day.
I'll say something optimistic about 2025 and the outlook. I think that elite programs and airlines are going to have to provide new benefits and new perks, because the old way of doing business is clearly going out the door. They want you to buy these things. So they better be finding another, you know, carrot out there, because the carrot that they've got, it's starting to smell. It's withering, no longer very tasty looking. So they got to find a brand new one.
Well, and a lot of people are also starting to realize I can get better benefits with these foreign programs, even when I'm flying domestically in the US. Like, I know a lot of people who have switched their loyalty to like British Airways, because if I have British Airways status, I can actually visit the American Airlines Admirals Club on a domestic flight in the US, and American Airlines elites don't get that benefit. So why don't I just use that status instead?
Yep.
Well, I will say, TK, you are in luck, because next year, I think we're going to see even newer carrots from Southwest Airlines. I don't know if you're going to get a better... I said that mostly with a straight face. I don't know if you're going to get a better Southwest experience if you get Iceland Air. Is it Saga elite status? But you might just get your seat assignment at no cost with Southwest.
I think I have a food allergy to Southwest carrots. I think my doctor said I cannot eat any more Southwest carrots. They're not good for me.
And I mean, like, there's people who just love Southwest. And I really wonder what's going to happen with those people when the whole model gets shaken up. So I think that's definitely like on the 2025 radar of like Southwest is going to shock a lot of people. And it's going to be really interesting to see.
But it's time.
How do people respond?
It's time. Southwest has not been the cheapest. We have a companion pass that's expiring at the end of the year. We have flown other airlines because I can get it cheaper. I can get three seats cheaper than paying for two. And so the fact that there's so many people that just go right to Southwest, I mean, that's got to be the most ingenious marketing of anything. But eventually people are going to wake up. You know, they still call.
I think it's the two free check bags. I really do. I think it's the two free check bags.
And that's a fair point. We never check. We seldom check. So that's not something that's going to move it for my family. But I mean, I just feel like people are eventually going to wake up on that.
You know, it really does feel like, you know, 2025, like the airline industry, they took a snow globe and just like shuck. And we're just waiting for everything to like fall down, you know, because every single corner of the industry has something happening. The low-cost carriers are all, you know, undone. The legacy carriers are undone. The ones in the middle are undone, like Alaska.
Southwest made its first ever alliance. Yeah. Like,
it seems like every single corner of the industry is dealing with a fundamental shift in the way they are doing their business, whether it's through mergers, bankruptcies, changes in business models, or, you know, just, you know, finding new ways to exploit your customers. It just seems interesting. It's just, I didn't expect, I think, for this much stuff to happen when I started 2024. I don't think I realized the amount of these type of changes kind of piling on one after another to kind of where there is just going to be a very interesting 2025 to see how all this shakes out. I think all these writers that are out of work are going to have a lot to write. It's becoming full circle from the beginning of this podcast.
And not only that, but if you look at like United's route announcements, I mean, they're just throwing darts at even new countries. I mean, you talk about a snow globe. I mean, they're going to fly to Greenland.
They're going to fly to Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia.
Yeah, how's that flight going to work? Because it's what? It's like a 737 out of Tokyo, right?
Yeah, it's like 4.5 hours, I think.
Yeah, that's a reopening essentially.
Yeah, that's the 737 that needs to have lay flats.
Yeah, that's the one that needs lay flats. But I mean, like, that's essentially them reopening the Narita hub, right?
Somebody sent me like a map that was like, starting next year, you'll be able to fly all of this on a 737. And it was like Greenland to Newark to like coast to coast to Hawaii to Guam.
Island hopper, like, Guam to Tokyo.
Through the island hopper, multiple stops up to Tokyo and over to Mongolia.
I mean, is United the new Pan Am? On a narrow body.
It's 6 hours. 6 hours from Tokyo to Ulaanbaatar.
Yeah, definitely needs a lay flat.
They can call Copa, get some tips.
Well, you know the history though, right? Wasn't Bethune involved in Copa to the point where their livery.
Continental, not United.
But okay. But roll it back. We'll roll it back for our listeners, right? United and Continental merged, what, in 2012, 2014? And before that, you know, obviously, Gordon Bethune was probably well before that. Gordon Bethune was the CEO of Continental. If you look at the Copa branding and the old Continental branding, I mean, you'd almost think that they just put a little bit of a filter on it and it's the same
airline.
They
shared a frequent flyer program. They were all one pass at one time.
So, I mean, it's not that far of a connection. I mean, you know, it's probably what, two lines of separation from Kevin Bacon?
You don't hear that as much.
Copa rebranded and launched the Connect Miles program in 2012.
There you go. That was probably when that merger happened. I remember doing, I think it was 2011. I did this fun flight.
2010. End of 2010 was the merger.
But I don't think they finished everything, if I recall, because I thought it was like 2011 or 2012 that I did a Brazil flight that I upgraded half of it under Continental rules. And I upgraded the other half under United rules. It was the weirdest thing, but it was like Brazil to Auckland.
The last Continental flight was in 2012 after a multi-phase merger that started in 2010.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember even in 2012, February of 2012, I had booked a way out on United rules and the way back on Continental rules. It was actually a lot of fun, believe it or not, because you had to understand two different programs for the same miles. And it worked out actually exceedingly well for me. So before we pivot to another topic, any other kind of forecasts for 25?
The Alaska Airlines stuff is going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. Also, with Delta unbundling, that's going to be super weird. Like, Delta continuously tells people will pay more for our flights because of the premium experience. And then you want to turn around and say, people are going to pay less for our flights to get a less premium experience. Like, how is it both? You're going to unbundle and provide a less premium experience, but then you're also constantly telling people, we charge a little bit more because we provide this premium experience. Like, which one is it?
I have been waiting since 2008 for Delta to get, you know, their comeuppance. Eventually, they're going to cut so much. And, you know, don't get me wrong, they walked back some stuff not that long ago, right? But the reality is there is just, and you know what? The level of arrogance and kind of their faith in the ability to charge the customer more and more, it hasn't really, you know, hurt them. They've been winning, you know, for more than a decade now, right? Where they keep million cuts. I mean, every single time. I am a Delta million miler and I've flown a lot of Delta. Mind you, I probably have flown, they're probably the airline I've flown the least as far as legacy carriers since then, since 2008, after kind of reaching that milestone. And I got to tell you, you know, it never surprises me how much Delta wants to cut and yet they still get away with it. So I do wonder if this is the year where they finally are going to be, you know, taught maybe more of a lesson, because, you know, it feels like there must be a limit somewhere, right?
And it's interesting to see this idea of like unbundling business class. Like, I don't know if they're trying to be like Zip Air, which, like, if anyone's not familiar, like Zip Air is a low cost carrier out of Japan that happens to offer lie flat seats in the front of its plane. It flies Boeing 787s long haul, it has lie flat seats in a 1-2-1, but I won't call it business class. It's not business class. It's unbundled. And they don't brand it. If you search Zip Air, you won't find business class on their flight. It's just called lie flat because that's what it is. It's a lie flat seat in a low cost model. You get on with everyone else. There's no priority boarding. There's no checked bags included. It's still an unbundled system. But would I go out of my way to earn elite status in a program with that model? Would I pay extra for that model? Would I brag about, like, I love Zip Air and I think that it's so premium. They're so much better than XYZ other carriers. No. So if Delta moves into that model, it's going to be really interesting to see, like, how do you tell people we think our flyers will pay more because our experience and everything that's involved is so much better. But then you're going to start removing parts of that. Well, you've just now kind of like cut the legs out from under that whole argument.
I think what they got right is they got to reward the people who pay more with more. But the way they're doing is cutting, which you probably should find out is ways to make it more interesting or better for those people who are paying that extra money. Like, I don't know what that looks like. But that's really what they should be doing. And rather, they're going the other direction. They're saying, oh, no. Our product's way too good. We got to start taking stuff out. You know, I mean, that's not true.
It's easier, right? I mean, look at what Qatar did, right? Some of the, I don't know if it's the I fare or a lower fare, they don't come with lounge access on their business class product.
I mean, Qatar's unbundling too, that, to be fair.
And there is no more premium business class airline or business class cabin than Qatar.
But I think that's an element that's very easy to control. It just can, when you check in, your boarding pass can just say lounge, no lounge. Like, that's really easy. The in-flight experience where, like, if the three of us are all sitting next to each other in business class and we've all bought these different bundles, like, you get a meal, you only get a drink and pretzels, and I get nothing. Like, putting all of that on the flight attendants to, number one, keep control of the chart and make sure they're giving the right things to the right people. But then the flight attendants also managing people's expectations, because you know there's going to be someone on there that's like, wait, hold on. Why didn't I get a meal? And they're like, oh, you didn't order a meal. Your ticket doesn't include a meal. And the guy right next to me has a meal. And now the flight attendant is going to have to take time, which then slows down the meal service for everyone else, because they're having to explain to me why I don't get a meal and the guy next to me got a meal. Like, that creates a lot of extra effort and customer expectations and a lot of friction. And the, you know who all of that's going to fall on? is the flight attendant getting yelled at because I think I'm getting ripped off or what, I'm being mistreated or whatever.
I mean, what they really should do is what Condor does. I mean, like Condor, for instance, and I haven't flown them, but I, what I understand is that first bulkhead row, right, in business, not only do they get everything that business class gets, but they get slippers, they get pajamas, they get an upgraded amenity kit, they get a different kind of, maybe there's something extra served with the meal. That's what they're doing, right? And you can upgrade into that, and it's just that first row.
And that's
right?
Very easy to identify.
That's something Delta should do.
And that's very easy to identify. It's very easy to keep separate versus when everyone's just kind of all over the place and like, you know, 5G gets a meal, but 5H doesn't get a meal, and 5A only gets pretzels. Like, that's a nightmare.
Yeah. Unbundling the meal service in business class. Oh my God. I mean, I forget Delta doesn't have a flight attendant union. So I guess I was going to say, how did the unions approve this? And I'm like, oh wait, that's right.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I thought I saw something saying that, what's her name? Sarah Nelson was saying that Delta was close.
Oh, that they might go union on the flight attendant.
I think it wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me, but you know, Delta, again, that is one thing they have been doing very well, is paying people big bonuses, you know, and their staff to keep them happy. Hopefully, you know, having people with, you know, a slightly better outlook on life because they're getting a big check, you know, not signing up for unions. I think that's something that they've been pretty successful with, at least again.
Yeah, they get,
for the last decade or so.
They get paid for boarding.
That's a good point.
I wonder if that increases the amount of PDBs.
Like, I'm not super knowledgeable about, you know, flight attendant type stuff, but I remember at one point that I had learned that the flight attendants essentially didn't get paid the whole time that the door was open, but they have to be there. Like, how are you going to explain to me? I've got to be here, but I'm not working, so I don't get paid. Like,
I think that's still the industry standard. I could be wrong because I know American got a new contract and I haven't looked at that, but Delta was the first, I think, to pay before the door closes.
And I think that that's why a lot of flight attendants don't want to go out of their way to like help you lift a heavy item into the overhead bin, because I'm not technically working right now. So would I be eligible for workers' compensation if something would happen to me?
I have to believe that's probably included in their contract.
But if I'm not getting paid right now, I'm not going to help you.
No. The not getting paid, not going to help. Yes. But I would imagine that if they got hurt while they're on the plane, they're probably covered under like the Jones Act or whatever the airline equivalent is. So I think we've had a lot of great conversation, but there's like the elephant in the room of topics. You are probably only you're probably among three people I know two people that I know that definitely have made it to every country in the world.
There was actually a really interesting data study that's like very nerdy about this, about like how many people have been to every country in the world. What kind of demographics are they? And the like best guess is it's like less than 400 people in history.
Wow. So I know 2%?
Half a percent?
Yeah. No, quarter percent, right?
That's a surprisingly small number.
Yeah, half a percent.
And yet, you know, I would agree that the challenge to do it is not particularly easy, right?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah,
it's like just lots of visa issues. Who's the other person that you know?
Stefan
Krasnowski.
Yeah, yeah. And then I thought Caroline was close, Caroline Lupini, but I could be wrong.
Oh, no, I think she's still a ways away.
Okay. I mean, she's certainly going to places that I wouldn't expect to, you know, unless you were trying to get to that list.
But there's a guy named Randy Williams. He's like a points and miles aficionado. He lives in San Diego. He's a radio host. He founded his own country in the desert in California called Slow Jamistan. He's been to every country. There's a woman that I have met, but I always forget her name. She's a points and miles person in San Francisco. She's a school teacher. She just finished going to every country. So I think in this kind of space, like, we naturally, I think, know more adventurous travelers because, like, if I can, you know, drastically slash my travel costs, then of course I can do these types of projects. So yeah, it's really interesting that like just the average random person might never meet someone who's been to every country, but like you could go to a points and miles conference and there might be three or four of us there.
Oh, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's dig into that. I have so many questions. So let's just start with an easier one, because I don't like want to ask what's your favorite country.
I hate those questions.
I do too.
What's your favorite airline? What's your favorite hotel?
Okay.
What's your favorite country?
We're going to move on.
You might have to cut that out. I'm sorry.
No, we're leaving it in.
Which airline has the best pretzels? Alaska Airlines.
Lufthansa First Class. Come on.
Oh, that's right.
Pretzels?
Oh, yes, drink. They have drink. Pretzel bread.
And by the way, drink time.
Okay. So, you know, being to every country in the world, you have had, you know, hundreds and hundreds of country entry experiences. What was the most notable?
I'll never forget the problems that I had going into Togo, which is a small country in the kind of panhandle of West Africa. So I have dual citizenship with Brazil, and entering the country on a Brazilian passport, they just firmly believed that I was smuggling drugs. Just
is that firmly. A Brazilian thing?
Well, I took French in school, but I didn't let on to them that I spoke French, so that way I could understand what they were saying about me without them knowing. The boss just kept telling the people, like, there's no way anyone from Brazil would be coming here.
Except
like,
for nefarious
reasons.
For
no reason. Like, he's hiding something, blah, 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 search him again. I got strip searched. They, like, took apart the interior of my roller bag and were, like, swabbing the insides of the handle and stuff. And it was just like ridiculous. And it just came down to like, that's prejudice. When you are singling someone out just simply because of the country that their passport says that they're from, like that's prejudice. That's discrimination. I mean, I was there for hours and I have proof of how long I was there because like every so often when they would kind of like all have their backs turned, I would like send a message to the guy from the hotel who was waiting outside to pick me up. And he's like, I'm still here. So I can go back and see how long I was there. So I sent a complaint to Brazil's embassy in Togo afterwards. And they like 100% went to bat for me. They sent a formal letter of complaint. The ambassador went to the like Ministry of Foreign Affairs in person and complained on my behalf. Like they were not joking around. Like they were very upset about what happened. Especially the kind of like discriminatory aspect of this. And Brazil actually has changed its, if you go to like the Brazil Ministry of like Foreign Relations and you look up like, do I need a visa to go blah, blah, blah? It says, don't go to Togo unless you have to because of kind of what this happened. Like, and all it took was one, like you mistreated one of our citizens. Like this is like one strike, you're out kind of thing. And it was really terrible. And I decided that I just had like such a bad experience entering the country that I changed my flight and left the next day. And that must have triggered something in their system, because then when I showed up at the airport to leave, all of those same dudes that had searched me the day before were waiting for me at check-in. And they were like, you told us you were going to be here for like 3 days. Now you're leaving. What's going on? I was like,
well, you made me feel so welcome.
I was like, do you think that I had a good experience coming to your country? Would you want to stay? I don't think that I had a good experience and I want to go somewhere else in a country where the people want me to be there. And they're like, searched all of my stuff all over again, blah, blah, blah. So there was like a desk at the airport, like an information desk that I went to once I had my boarding pass. And I was like, hi, I want to file a complaint about what has happened to me here. And one of those dudes happened to like walk by and saw me speaking to the person at the desk in French. And you could just see like all of the like gears turning in his head. That's like, oh snap. This dude speaks French. That means that he understood everything we were saying about him. And so while I was waiting for my flight, the airport manager actually came and found me while I was waiting for my flight and was like, talk to me. Like, you seem very upset. I've heard that you're going to file like a complaint with your embassy. What's going on? And I told him everything. And he was like, I want you to come back. Like, I'm really unhappy to hear that this is your experience in our country. But if that was my experience going to your country, I would also be leaving. So like it was the worst. I've had more dangerous situations going to some places. I spent a night in the jail at the Angola immigration airport jail for Angola.
Why is it always Africa?
Yeah, like I would not have expected.
I think even though that was like pretty hairy, the experience with Togo really soured me because of just the way that it happened and the way that
the way that you were kind of like singled out, maybe.
Like I wouldn't go back there.
You got.
I would rather go to somewhere where the people are like, "Hi, thanks for coming to our country."
So I have to be honest with you, and having only been to like 2-3 countries in Africa, maybe my experience is limited. Although I was just on the other side, of a border in Ghana, and I didn't have. I mean, I had some corruption type experiences, but I didn't have anything like what you had.
I've been to the airport in Lomé.
Yeah,
I expected you to say something like in the Middle East, like or Southwest Africa, or not Southwest Africa, Southwest.
How about North Korea?
North Korea was fine. I mean, like I went on a tour and everything is controlled. So
I could see that being not so bad. Although I'd love to hear if you've got a story from your time in North Korea or did you fly Air Koryo?
I did.
Oh, you did.
That's so exciting. Here, out of like everything, there's so much to talk about with Air Koryo. Yes, the TV screens were playing those like propaganda videos on, you know, the old like built into the wall TV screens. So I'm vegan. I've been vegan for like 20 years. And I told the tour guide like, hey, I'm vegan. Like, is this going to be a problem? Should I pack some like protein bars for this trip, whatever? And they're like, not a problem. We can even get you a vegan meal on the flight. And I was like, this is going to be so interesting. So everyone's getting this like mystery meat sandwich, like on a bun. And then mine comes and I was like, this kind of looks like what everyone else is getting. And I opened the bun and it was just like bun with a slice of tomato. And that was it. That was my sandwich. It was a slice of tomato between two pieces of bread.
Sounds amazing.
But it was a vegan meal on Air Koryo.
What plane was it?
It was an old Russian Tupolev.
Oh, okay. I figure it's either an Aleutian or Tupolev, right? It's going to be one of those two.
I wrote a review of it at Miles to Memories, actually. So let me go find this.
We'll have to go check that out at some point.
So I'm curious, do you keep track of the different aircraft, airframes, and variants that you fly?
No.
And that's a totally cool thing.
I just keep track of like distance that I fly. I flew on a Tupolev 204-100 series.
I have never had the pleasure of flying a Russian aircraft. I don't know that I will.
One would hope that eventually, you know, well, are they still building? Like, are they still?
No. I mean.
I was about to say, one would hope that eventually, you know, things will normalize, but some of these aircraft just aren't being built anymore.
Maybe like a Sukhoi Superjet or something. Maybe they still have some of those around or somewhere, but I think they have some Aleutians in either Venezuela or Cuba. You know, I think some of those national airlines might still have some.
Yeah. So, vegan meal on Air Koryo. Any other interesting? Oh my gosh, that's almost like a what would that be? Like almost like a focaccia, right?
I mean, but it was like a hamburger bun with just a slice of tomato in the middle.
You gotta class it up with a hamburger bun.
It was hilarious. Like the other people sitting with me were dying laughing.
So, any interesting experiences with North Korea?
I mean, I thought it was interesting. Like, I actually really want to go back. They're supposed to reopen for tourism finally. Like they're still closed for COVID border control, but they're supposed to reopen like beginning of December. And like I would like to go back and see more of the country. I thought that it was really interesting. Like I really enjoy going to places that you get there and you're just like, this place ain't like where I grew up. And I mean that's 100%. That's North Korea. That's China. That's Japan. That's Bhutan. That's Madagascar. Like I grew up in Ohio outside Columbus, and I mean, those places just feel so different that it's just really interesting. And I would like to go back.
What struck you the most? Was it the architecture? Was it, you know, a particular experience with the people?
Yeah. I think that the architecture and like, you don't see advertisements anywhere. Like there's no paid commercials. Like we rode the subway and it was just, imagine riding a subway where there's no advertising inside. There's no, you know, buy this, go to this store. It was just really strange to just not be bombarded with advertising at all.
Was there propaganda in its place, or was there just nothing there?
very, very minimal, like, be a good worker type of, like, posters, but not, like, if you ride a subway car in New York City, like, your subway car has, like, 100 signs inside.
They got them hanging from the ceiling, too, right?
Yeah. This had, like, one at that end and one at that end, and then the rest was just, like that, you know, kind of wood paneling, you know, looks like wood, but it's, like, kind of plasticky, because they're old S-Bahn trains. Yeah, they're old S-Bahn trains from Berlin. So it was just like, it was really kind of otherworldly being just disconnected from the onslaught of advertising that's everywhere you go. Like, I would go back. I thought it was really interesting.
I mean, it does. It does. I don't know. I remember the feeling that I had in China, and I'm just imagining that you probably had magnitudes more than that. Just that, you know, clearly you look out of place. Clearly the architecture is so different. How people interact is different. Just from a people watching perspective, that must have been, you know, very surreal.
Yeah. I was on a tour that was like, I think there were like three of us from the US. There were like three Germans, two from Sweden, and like two from the UK. I think there was like, I don't know, probably like 15 people on our, there was like 15 people on our tour.
You know, my parents, you know, who are naturalized citizens here in the US, were able to go to North Korea as part of a South Korean tour group that one of my relatives had put together. And of course, they got a little extra scrutiny because they were the only US passport holders on this little tour bus. They really did enjoy the experience. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little too risk averse. This was probably more than a decade ago when relations were a little bit warmer. And you know that since then, you know, I would say Americans potentially could be targets a little bit, you know, and they have been in the past for some of these places. But of course, I don't know. Maybe the bellicosity is not at its height right now, but it's probably not at its lowest either.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, everyone has to kind of make their own decision. I know, like, when I went on my US passport and the tour guide was just like, listen, we take people here all the time and 99% of them have no problem if you just kind of follow the rules. And she was like, you know, here's kind of an example. She was actually the tour guide who was leading the group of Otto Warmbier, who was the guy who like
notorious.
Got arrested and then like kind of came back to the US in a coma. She was like, listen, so like he's accused of like breaking a law. Breaking a rule is very different. 2 months ago, we had like two brothers who were from Australia. They got drunk at the hotel, started kind of shoving each other, and the one shoved the other one and he like fell onto a coffee table and broke it. They gave them a bill. He paid the bill and everything was fine. So it's like kind of, you know, if you break a rule or if you break a law and, you know, like without kind of going into it, like she had no doubt in her mind that like she didn't think that they just grabbed Otto Warmbier for no reason. From all of the questions that she had asked, she is of the opinion that he did try to steal something. And, you know, so that kind of changes everything. But just from like the questions that I've asked and like, you know, because someone else who was on our tour was very, very concerned. Like we had booked the tour before that happened. And then all the stuff with Otto Warmbier happened like 3 weeks before our tour. So the other guy from the US was like very, very concerned. And he was like, well, I'm going to go to Beijing, go to the pre-tour meeting and make up my mind. And if I just like decide to not go, I'm okay with that. And there was just like this very long conversation of asking, like, don't BS us. Like, what's the real situation? And she was like, I would bet on my life that you're not just going to get snapped off the street just for being from the US. And I went and I had no problems. You could say that, like, you know, my one limited experience doesn't speak for everyone. And, you know, everyone has to kind of make their own decision. But like, I wouldn't hesitate to recommend people to go.
I would offer that they probably would be even more hesitant to pull a second American after the first, because then you're starting to build a trend. And, you know, one, yeah, maybe they did do something wrong. I'm not familiar with the whole case. I'm not familiar with any of that. So I'm not going to opine on that. All I'll say is one could be an anomaly. Yes, maybe they did it, maybe they didn't. But two, now it starts to look like maybe you're being a little aggressive.
It's a pattern.
So let's pivot to your experiences, you know, in country, not necessarily North Korea, but could you share one or two maybe kind of really meaningful or memorable cultural exchanges that you've had, you know, with all these different countries? I mean, I have to believe you're connecting
with
them.
It's got to be a couple of gems
just listening
in there,
to
right?
you.
We need to hear about the gems.
I went to the finals of the, like, I want to say maybe 2018, 2019. The finals of the, like, best MC rap battle competition in Nigeria by accident. So I was staying at a Protea hotel, which is like you can book with Marriott points. And and I love just kind of like asking bellhops and staff and stuff, like not the concierge, asking the like people who...
The rank and file kind
of. Yeah, the like rank and file at a hotel, like what's something that I shouldn't miss while I'm here? And not the concierge, because I don't want the concierge to send me where all the foreigners are going. I want the people who like take the bus to work to tell me what's something that I shouldn't miss while I'm here. And this guy was like, well, do you want to hang out with me and my friends? We're going out to this like event in the park after work. And I was like, absolutely. Had no idea what was going on at all. All I knew was like me and my friends were going out somewhere after work. So the guy was like, well, it's going to take us like an hour and a half to get there because we're going to have to like change three buses, blah, blah, blah. I was like, dude, we're taking an Uber. Like, I got this. Like, I'm not spending an hour and a half and changing three buses and whatever to like save $5. So we take this Uber to this park in the middle of downtown, and there is like rap battles going on. And it's like kind of the finals of something is the best that I could understand from what they were telling me. Was that this had been like something leading up to this. And this was like the final night of like these Nigerian dudes just going at it. You know, a DJ just put on a beat and you start rapping. And it was just so like, I just was like sitting there and like there was like food trucks and stuff. And I just remember sitting there and was like, how did I wind up here? Like, this is just so entirely random that I'm at this event and like tons of people are showing up and everyone shows up and they're like saying hi to their friends. And then everyone's like, who is this white dude? Like, how did this guy wind up here? Who is this random white guy sitting over here? Just like eating some chips at this table. So I love that kind of stuff of just asking people like, what should I not miss? What should I know about that's going on here?
I love the randomness. Those are the best.
And that's, you just stumble onto, right? Something that's like, yeah, like that was not in the guidebook. There was no way that I was going to find out about that from going to TripAdvisor.
Yeah, that's not even in ChatGPT. You're not finding that unless you get, you know, the ground truth there.
Yeah,
that's so incredible.
Like, I love those kinds of things. That one was really memorable.
Do you have another, possibly from another continent by chance?
What else have I stumbled into?
We've been giving a lot of love to South America and Africa.
Yeah.
This is definitely a Southern Hemisphere.
I know. They're getting a lot of love.
Oceania.
I love saying positive things about places that you don't tend to hear a lot of positive things about, especially like in the US, US media. Like, one of my favorite countries I ever went to was Iran. Like, when was the last time you heard somebody say something positive about it?
But I could say, but
I could so believe visiting. That, though.
Oh, I could so believe it. Because, I mean, there's
the
so many amazing
the history.
Things. Yeah.
They
were
the friendliest people I've ever met in my life.
I hear that everywhere.
I think my mind tends to go there a lot because I like kind of saying positive things about countries that, you know, you ask somebody is like, what was a country that you went to and you had like a great experience? I'm like, Nigeria. Like, that tends to kind of throw a lot of people, you know, because most people, their only experience with Nigeria is like getting an email from a Nigerian prince who needs you to help him launder money. Another country that I think was just kind of really otherworldly was Bhutan. Bhutan is a small country kind of between like China, Nepal, and
gross national
India.
Happiness.
Yeah. So they don't worry about GDP. They rank, you know, they worry about their gross national happiness, and they limit the number of tourists that can come into the country. Like, they just kind of saw what was happening with Bangkok in the 60s. And they're like, we don't want to get overrun and kind of lose our sense of who we are. So they control the number of tourists. It's the only carbon negative country in the world. Their constitution requires that 60% of the country must be covered in forest. And it's just super, super interesting. It was another place that was like, this is so unlike anywhere I've ever been before. Anyone who loves anything about like aviation, planes, weird airports, the approach to the airport there is just like wild. You can look for
like 20 pilots in the world are certified
Are certified for landing there. Yeah. No first officer is allowed to land there. Only pilots are allowed to land there. There's some pretty cool videos of the approach if you look up like Sam Chewy on YouTube. And then I stayed at a small luxury hotel's property that like redefined all inclusive. Like not only were meals included, but like fitness classes were included and like daily meditation was included and visits with the on-site like traditional medicine man were included. And you just kind of had this like one-on-one meeting when you got there and he was like, what are you hoping to get out of your visit? And I was like, oh, I mean, like I kind of want to relax and like, you know, kind of like forget about everything and just like, you know, kind of tune out for a little bit while I'm here. He was like, do you have any physical problems? And I was like, oh, I mean, I have like, you know, lower back pain sometimes. And he was like, oh, okay. So, you know, let's like prescribe you some massages and this like workout regimen while you're here, blah, blah, blah. And then like he took all of his notes from our meeting and went to the kitchen and told them, okay, so while this guy is here, you know, you should like do this or whatever. So if you say like, oh, I've been, you know, like having indigestion, like he's probably going to go to the kitchen, you know, tone down the garlic, nothing spicy. And they like curate all of your food and everything and your like exercise and mental wellness and stuff all kind of comes out of this meeting with this like shaman when you first arrive. And it was like, I've never seen anything like this at a hotel before. And it was like 5-star dining. Everything like really beautifully presented. They grow all the produce there, like, you know, in a garden next to the hotel. It was just totally was outside my thoughts of like what was possible that a hotel could do.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't ask what the name of the hotel is.
The Bhutan Spirit Sanctuary. And it's built in an old monastery. So like has the whole like just everything that you would think if you picture like a monastery in the Himalayas with like the giant brass doors to go inside the courtyard and stuff, the Bhutan Spirit Sanctuary. And it's incredible. I've never said I got to go back to this hotel about any other hotel, but I got to go back to that hotel.
So how hard is it to get into Bhutan? My understanding is that there's some sort of additional fee.
Yeah. You have to pay like a daily visitor's fee. That's like part of your visa and stuff. So there is a daily visitor's fee, which is actually cut in half through mid-2027, I think, or mid-2026. So if you want to go to Bhutan, like the next 2 years are kind of the time to do it. Because the daily visitor's fee is like $200 per day while you're in the country. And that's just to be there. That doesn't include your meals and flights and whatever. That's just like for being in the country. And that subsidizes their national healthcare and education and all that stuff. So cutting that in half, like, that really adds up if you're there for 5 days or 7 days or whatever.
I think we have to put it high on the list, TK. Next guy's trip.
So I think Bhutan is awesome. Logistically, getting there is a little bit complicated because only airlines from Bhutan are allowed to fly into Bhutan. So you need to fly to like India, Nepal. There's like twice a week from Bangkok and I think once a week from Singapore. Getting to Delhi is, I think, kind of the easiest for most people. There's like a lot of options. The flights were not very expensive compared to some of the longer flights to Singapore or Bangkok. And then the flight out of Delhi, like I flew on Druk Air, which is one of their national airlines. It went up to Kathmandu. Some people got on and off. And then we continued over and we flew right past Mount Everest on the way, which was also just like super awesome.
Oh my God. That just sounds incredible.
Yeah. You got a window seat on the left.
That just sounds incredible.
Yeah, and it was just otherworldly. It was one of those places that you're like, this is not like anywhere I've ever been.
I know off the top of my head, at least five or six friends who've been there. So as otherworldly and as hard as it is to get to, in our circles, it's probably a little bit more common.
We are a small community, but we spread wide.
The Miles and Points community. Yes, we do.
There you go. So, Ryan, we could be picking your brain for for hours more. And we want to be respectful of your time because we so appreciate this has been just such an incredible conversation. I want to close with one last question. You've left many, many countries. I assume you didn't do every country on a single passport. There's just not enough pages. What was your most humorous experience leaving a country when they're trying to find the entry stamp?
Yeah, there's definitely been a lot of like flipping back and forth and trying to find it. And I'm like, I think it was on page 11 maybe. And there was like, yeah, but I've gotten much better about trying to remember. Like once I get the stamp and they give me my passport back, then I try to pay attention. So that then when I'm leaving, I'm like this, you know, the stamp's on 19. Because yeah, there were definitely a lot of times where they're just like flipping back and forth and stuff. And you're just like, ah, this is going to take forever.
I used to put like the little sign here or one of those little flag things that you can like take off and put on and, you know, they're reusable. Oh,
I put post-it notes on my passport now and clip the pages together. And there's like a post-it note that says, please don't use these pages. And then like clip together. And then on the other end says, please don't use these pages. To force like, let's fill up page one before you start stamping on page two. Because otherwise you get a lot of people that just randomly flip open and stamp on 43. And then now all of a sudden, like you've got one stamp on all pages. But if you're going to apply for a visa, a lot of those embassies will say like, you need to have two full blank pages, whatever, whatever. And then, you know, page 9 has one stamp on it. So they put your visa on 10 and then some other guy flips it open and puts one stamp on 11. And like now all of a sudden two stamps and one visa, I ate up three pages. So I got this tip from somebody else like years ago is to just kind of railroad them into where you want them to stamp by kind of like clipping pages together. And when they open the passport, it's just going to fall open to the empty space you want them to use.
And I've used those little like, you know, stickers to kind of indicate, I'd really like you to put the stamp here. I started doing that because I was going back and forth to Ghana so frequently back in 2011, 2012, that the immigration officer opens my passport, flips page one, page two, and then hands it back to me and says, show me your entry stamp for this trip. And it took me a good 2-3 minutes of swiping through myself. But the other interesting, and I'll share my own interesting story other than that, my daughter's just over 3 and she's been to 28 countries now. When you look at the face of somebody when you're entering a country or exiting a country that they actually have to do the stamp, they sort of look at her passport as they're flipping through, they look over the desk to look at her and then they look back at the passport and they're like, how did you go all these places? It's just kind of a funny, I mean, you know, I'll say that that's like a little brag.
Humble brag. Humble brag.
But yeah, they're like,
or maybe not.
We don't see people with this many stamps usually like being that old.
Yeah. Yeah. So Ryan, thank you so much. This has been absolutely fantastic. You know, would love to have you back on. We could record.
I'm sure we could fill up another episode.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't even get to my prediction about, I think Marriott's going to move another brand into reduced earnings next year. That's my like shot in the dark for 2025. I think Marriott's going to move another brand into the reduced earnings, whether it's a new one, whether it's an existing one, but like, come on, the writing's on the wall. They keep doing this.
Okay. So shots fired. Let's just give our listeners a little bit more context. Which brand did they move and how did that brand go into reduced earnings? Like what's the impact here?
They bought the like City Centro brand in Mexico and it earns like half stay credits and half the number of points as if you would stay at like a Courtyard or Marriott brand or whatever. Then like launched this new 4 points express brand that's also then going to earn like half the number of stay credits. Then they moved some of their extended stay properties down into, you know, reduced earnings as well. And it just seems like Marriott's kind of doing with their hotel stays what we've kind of seen airlines doing with like basic economy. Like you will only earn like half the number of miles if you fly in basic economy because you paid just so little. But you earn more miles and more status points and whatever if you fly in first class. And Marriott is now kind of doing some of that with their hotel brands. Hilton doesn't do something like this. Like Hyatt is going to for the first time, launch its first brand, which is going to be an extended stay brand, is going to be its first one that doesn't earn. One night is one night. Points are points. So Marriott seems to be so happy about this strategy. I think they're going to do another.
I wasn't aware Hyatt was launching a brand like that.
It's going to be an extended stay brand. Yeah, Hyatt Studio.
Wow. You buried the hotel juice, I will say, at the end. I love it.
I mean, hot takes.
Yeah, no, you do. Okay, I'll give you an opportunity. Any other hot takes you want to share before we close out here?
People are going to be like, as much as people are going to complain about the Alaska changes for next year, people are going to be really happy to be able to book multi-carrier awards. And I think people are going to forget about it once they start.
I'm going to be excited to get credit for my award redemptions. Because, you know, I redeemed tons of Alaska miles. So
did you guys buy a lot of Hawaiian miles when they were just on sale? It was like the cheapest price ever to get Alaska miles by, you know, with the recent sale on Hawaiian miles.
The membership rewards to Hawaiian.
Oh, Hawaiian was selling miles at 1.27 cents.
Yeah, I think
Alaska miles at 1.27 cents like I did. We'll redeem them happily from Alaska miles, bought them, and 5 minutes later transferred them over.
I would easily redeem
Alaska miles at above 1.27 cents.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I would have if I didn't have so many membership rewards points. And at one point there was that transfer bonus. So, I mean, we leveraged that because that's what we had rather than putting out cash.
A lot of people crossed their fingers on that. And then, you know, it worked out.
And if you think about it, even if you just transfer one for one, which is what I think I did last week or earlier this week, you know, you're still getting at a bare minimum, like what, 1.27, because that's what it would have cost if you bought, which is better than the 1.1 if you just redeem via Schwab. And like you, I mean, I just booked my mother-in-law on a flight that was going to cost $480 to fly from BWI down to Daytona, booked that for 7,500 points. So, I mean, to me, that's a great value. I still cite the Alaska quote unquote devaluation that they did, you know, going to kind of distance-based as the only devaluation that I've ever loved.
Yeah, it's just been incredible. If you're booking those short-distance ones, it can actually be really good, especially the short-distance ones where there's not a lot of competition on the route, so the airlines like kind of charge whatever they want.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you look at a route like Daytona, I think it's Delta and American. Those are your only options. There might be some LCCs, but like Southwest doesn't fly there and all that other stuff. And
it helps to be in an American hub city, though. They fly BWI to Daytona.
No, you had to connect in Charlotte. But
you did have to connect in Charlotte. Okay.
I mean, your alternative is you pay $10,000 or $15,000 to connect via Atlanta on Delta. It's a route that I, for better or for worse, I've learned quite well on what works and what doesn't. But yeah, so your Alaska point, I think Alaska has some goodwill, and so I think they can get through a little bit, especially with that multi-partner award piece. I'm still rooting for the little guy.
Yeah, they really seem to not be trying to, you know, dig it, you know, really stick it to the customer as much as the other loyalty programs. I think they realize that the loyalty program is something that is generating value, not something that they need to extract value from, you know, as an airline. I think they're still in a kind of a growth mode where they realize they want to get bigger and they want to be a larger network carrier than they are now. And part of that pathway involves having a very generous and attractive loyal program so that they can keep the customers.
Like you need to add new customers and keep the ones that you have.
Yep. And they got to show all the Hawaiians, you know, hey, this is why you should be happy that we merged to your local airline. And then you got to show all the, you know, all the West Coast people and even some of those East Coast crazy people who are, you know, aspiring to be 75K. I mean, that's actually pretty crazy, you know, that I know quite a few East Coast MVP 75K people. But anyway.
We need an East Coast hub. Come on, Alaska, some love.
They got to buy like JetBlue or something. Alaska's just got to buy JetBlue. I think that's what's got to happen.
Oh my God, that would.
And then got to have even more Airbuses. That would be even more A320s.
it would be wild, but a burden. I mean, and it would make Alaska a three-continent airline.
It would. It would make them an actual bona fide network carrier, I think. They would be a legitimate competitor with some of the legacies if they were to merge with JetBlue. But God knows if that would ever happen. Yeah, if it would get approved. Well, you never know.
I don't know. We're in a new environment. That's true. You know, potentially.
Different Department of Justice pretty soon, we think.
It's almost absolutely apt, right? You know, with the guy who's been to every country in the world, I feel like we've covered so many different topics. We've covered airline industry, I should say, travel industry, the blogger or travel writing and miles and points writing industry. We've covered, you know, some incredible travel destinations, some incredible travel insights. We've even covered hotels.
You so might be winning Travel Stories Bingo, you know?
Yeah, I think you did. I think you did win Travel Stories Bingo. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ryan, for coming on. Can you tell our listeners how they can find you and find your awesome content?
Sure. I'm the news managing editor at Upgraded Points. So you can check out upgradedpoints.com. You can email me at ryan@upgradedpoints.com. You can find me on X, formerly Twitter, Ryan Smith Travel. You'll see me complaining about Uber or trying to figure out why they stopped replying after they didn't resolve an issue. But you'll also see some, like, we're kind of chatting about Copa Redemption and stuff, or my Copa flight that I was on just earlier this week. So yeah, I kind of sometimes forget that I had Twitter, and then I randomly show back up and post a lot. So be prepared for it to be inconsistent if you start following me.
It does indeed. Have you also moved to Blue Sky at all? Or established a presence?
There's so many Ryan Smiths. I guess I should grab a good screen name before they
disappear. Is Blue Sky going to make it? Are they going to stick around for a while, do you think?
So there are 21 million, according to CNBC this afternoon. My guess is they will. And I think it's because people really want it to survive. One experience that I had within about 3 or 4 minutes of signing up myself, like a week or less ago, I found Seth Miller, who, gosh, I really need to get him on the show, Wandering Aramean. He's on Dots Lines Destination, the original travel podcast. I mean,
he's a politician now. Does he have time for us?
I feel like I can convince him to make some time for us. He created two different lists. And so within like 5 minutes of being on Blue Sky, he tags me on a post, two links that have probably 50 to 100 people on them. A lot of the people that I follow on Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter. No, I'm calling it Twitter. I'm sorry. You know, all due respect.
I still call it Twitter. Yeah, I still call it.
All due respect. I'm going to call it Twitter. And so in the span of about 10 minutes from the, and it was probably just, you know, point of luck that Seth noticed that I had followed him, unless he's got some sort of automated thing. I don't know. If anybody would do it, he would. And the way Blue Sky has like these APIs and stuff, it seems like there's ways to do stuff like that. But needless to say, I get a list of 50 to 100 people that I already know, I already follow, instead of having to search all their names and remember all, you know, what their handles might have been and all that other stuff. Instead, boom, just, you know, click, follow. I had a network in 10 minutes, and now I've got, you know, almost the same level feed as I've got with Twitter. And unfortunately, we're seeing some people now exiting Twitter. So I felt like it was a necessity to move over to, you know, to at least replicate, you know, digital identity, I'll say, in Blue Sky.
I'm going to exercise my old person card and say, darn it, another screen I got to look at.
I skipped Snapchat. I skipped TikTok. I have a name on Instagram. I don't do anything with it. But Blue Sky seemed like, from the little limited time I'm spending on it, it seems like it's going to be a viable social media platform. It doesn't have everything. I ran a poll on Twitter, which kind of seemed interesting and then died. Or
seems appropriate name for a social media platform that died.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Did they know it ahead of time
when it was going to go extinct? Like,
I mean, it's an apt name for
social. I'm going to start a social media platform called the Dodo.
You know it's going to survive then. Oh gosh. Wow.
I learn something new every day.
We're getting off track, I think.
Ironic social media.
Well, I mean, if there was going to be an episode that was going to cover this many topics, I feel like this was the right one to do it.
I don't think we're going to get another Travel Stories Bingo winner like this, at least for a while.
Well, thank you so much. And hopefully we see you on Blue Sky, just so I'm not the only idiot that moved over. Well, not idiot, sure. But
I'm going to walk my dog and then make a Blue Sky account.
If you follow Seth Miller or me or both, I'm sure if you follow Seth, you'll get added to his lists. It'll be great. You'll have like a whole network. The only thing we need with Blue Sky is that we need to get, you know, vendors, not vendors, but like companies out there It's not quite like that with like American and Delta and others that provide customer service on Twitter.
Don't provide customer service on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, there are some that are amazing, right? Hyatt, American.
I think Alaska's customer service on Twitter is actually really awesome. British Airways is also really good. I have booked Avios redemptions with British Airways through their Twitter before.
British or American?
British. Like DMing them and saying the website's having problems. I tried calling. I'm going to wait on hold forever. Can you just go into my account and make this award redemption? And
they did it. Every time I tag British, I get like 200 people saying, we're so sorry for your experience. Give us your confirmation number and let us rob money from you.
I mean, yeah, you got to like DM their actual account.
Okay. I need to look into that. And well, Ryan, thanks again for coming on. This has been incredible. We really appreciate you. Thank you.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I didn't expect to say so much that I would keep you here so long.
Oh my gosh, but it's been so fun. You are welcome back anytime. Anytime. Awesome. You have a platform for your message. And with so many countries that you've visited, I am sure that there is some additional messaging that you want to that you want to send.
We'll do a quarterly thing.
There we go. Hey, that'd be great. That would be great.
All right. This was a lot of fun. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Mileonomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth content in the miles, points, and travel world. Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.